Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to MBR, or as we like to call it around here, Nothing But Rants, the show where I find topics that I'm oddly passionate about, and I pontificate upon them. These are not hot takes, but rather takes that I'm hot about.
Let's shut up and grind some tape.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome in to the Film Guy Network on a fabulous Tuesday evening here inside the studio. I forgot to say this during pre-show planning, but I'm going to say it right now. I need you to kill everything you got. If it's on your phone, turn your Wi-Fi off. If it's on your laptop, turn your Wi-Fi off. I text my wife, no Wi-Fi, can't use it. Can't have nothing crashing tonight. I think it was part YouTube, part us last night. We apologize for it. So here we are, fingers crossed, excited to be with you guys here on what is set to be another loaded show for you guys. We got returning production numbers. Shout out Bill Connelly over there at ESPN. I feel like Bill Connelly been doing that since I've been doing this. Mm-hmm. I feel like Bill Connelly been a name I need to know but ain't never seen as long as I've been doing this. Have you ever bumped into Bill Connelly?
Maybe I have and just didn't know.
Didn't know? Yeah. But I feel like as of late, we've bumped into every big wig. I feel like Bill Connelly's one of these mythical whales I got to run into out here in the wild.
I honestly don't know what he looks like.
So don't either. Well, the profile picture look a little outdated on social media. But nonetheless, Bill Connelly gave us returning production numbers. We've got thoughts and observations based off of that. FanDuel gave us some win totals. We're going to be bringing you those lines courtesy of FanDuel because there is no other lines right now. So not that we're dealing with FanDuel. We just ain't got nobody else to do it with, as you can notice. Kind of a free
up
agent
some
right here. Yeah, a little up some season. Maybe a free agency going on?
That's perhaps. Right.
Dangerous, dangerous.
A little pre-tampering.
That's what I'm talking about right there, Jonathan. All that good stuff. We got win totals. Mendoza versus Simpson seems to be a talking point. I've got my final grades on those two football players tonight. Mm. I've got final grades on, what is it, about seven guys? Up there on that board of 60 that I got to get through?
Looks about eight, I'd say.
We got a lot of them. We got a lot of them still to do. We might roll that out tonight and talk about that. Some good talking points on that. We also got some coaches to talk about. Dabo can't seem to catch a break. Seemed like he a little bit cursed, unfortunately, out there. Alex Golish going to get a very interesting player comp from yours truly tonight. And John Summerall already backpedaling.
Can't have that.
Can't have that. John Summerall, my guy. I'd play for that guy. Watch out now.
That's going down. Has there ever been a I'd play for that guy that you jump off the train before the season starts?
Shane Beamer seesawed me like three times.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to spoil our upcoming segment, but I think I need to add the Florida under to my lock right now.
Oof.
Now that you just doubled down on the I'll play for that guy.
Well, we got that coming tonight. We got all kinds of good stuff here on the live stream for you guys tonight. Where should we begin? Ooh, I know. We should be giving with thumbs up, subscribe, and tell a friend. Hit that thumbs up. Make sure you subscribe. And if you haven't, tell a friend. Somebody said, well, Brooks, what if I don't have a friend? Well, I'm sure you got some family. If not, we can be that for you. How about that?
Who wouldn't have friends? Someone's got at least
I
one.
I think maybe they were just being that guy. But that was a top comment last night. Brooks, what if I don't have friends? Find them. Find them and tell them about this
just
place.
Tell strangers. Man.
Yeah. Walk down the street. Heard about the film guy? You should. All right. Here we go. Make sure you hit that thumbs up button. Bill Connelly. Returning production numbers brought to us. Who wants to give an overview for what this generally is for college football fans if they don't know about Bill Connelly's returning production numbers?
Oh, I mean, it's a simple.
Pretty simple.
It's a simple breakdown where he ranks them in three different categories. You rank all the teams with the overall returning production, which means players that played on that team last year that are returning on both offense and defense. So you take the collective production, you rank that. He does offensive rankings, and he also does defensive rankings. So, like I said, it's just returning players that produce numbers on offense and defense and rank those
teams.
That
was my question here off camera. Is this actual, like, statistical production, or does he have things like rep share and, like, snap counts? Because I would imagine nowadays with PFF – you can have things like this. Like, I know exactly how many snaps you played last year.
That it's just the pure production that you produced. I'm sure that I could find it real quick if I could just read over this for a second and really get a actual definition for you.
Like, if the nose tackle position at a certain school has 26 tackles,
and one player is responsible, or, you know, the player's responsible for 23 of them are returning. You've got 23 of 26 returning production points at that certain position, and we extrapolate that across the board, maybe, something like that. Either way, it gives us a good indication on what's returning on each of these teams. Now, Kirby, it is worth noting, as I get my laptop ready, it is worth noting that this metric has become a little less meaningful over the last several years. For example, last year's number one team in returning production was none other than the Clemson Tigers.
I've pulled some statistics on this, actually, if you'd like me to read them.
I would love this.
So the 2025 season, the top five teams in returning production were Clemson, Arizona State, Illinois, Texas Tech, Kennesaw State. Obviously, Texas Tech and Kennesaw State are the two that had the best seasons out of the bunch. Texas Tech went 12-2.
Immediate question. So you said a school like Kennesaw State. That roster got completely turned over. So did he count last year the production returning? In other words, this transfer's come in. He played a lot at another school. He's got production. He counts? Because Kennesaw State was a brand new roster last year.
Kennesaw State was in the top five for 2025.
I'm very confused on how he did this. But, yeah, okay, go ahead. Sorry to cut you off.
Yeah, no, so, I mean, Kennesaw State and Texas Tech, but I've went through and pulled the last four seasons. Like, there's a lot of bad examples in here. In 2024, Virginia Tech was the number one team. They finished 6-7. Yeah. That was the classic.
Kyron Jones.
Yeah, sneaky Virginia Tech season. 2023 is the only year that has really good examples in this. That was Florida State. They obviously went undefeated in the regular season. Michigan was also in the top five this year. In 2022, Bowling Green had the highest returning production. They finished 6-7. So of the 11 of 20 teams that were, you know, ranked in the top five the last 4 years, more than 11 of them suffered more than five losses. Only two of these 20 teams have made the college football playoff. Five of these 20 teams have won four games or less in the ensuing season, and three of the four number one teams ranked lost at least six games. So it's not that great of a statistic, honestly.
So here's how he works, because he does include transfer production into these numbers, but this is how he breaks it down. If your starting quarterback returns, you might return close to 100% of your passing yardage from last season, but if you lost a 3,000-yard passer and brought in someone else's 3,000-yard passer, that means you return only 50% of yardage, 3,000 divided by 3,000 plus 3,000.
Okay.
So that's how that works. It's not just you absolutely, like, you replace that directly.
So he has added in transfer differences. So that's, yes, that's good to know. Mm-hmm. I just don't know how you do that, because, like, it's a percentage of returning production on your team. Mm-hmm. So how do I calculate your production on another team into my production from last year?
I don't know. Sounds like it breaks into snaps.
All right. So now that we've poked holes in the entire metric, let's talk about, you know, some observations from the metric in and of itself. Mm-hmm. We don't have the actual top 132 for you guys, but you can find it on Bill Connolly's list. I think my number one takeaway was Maryland being at number two with, I think, 71% of its returning production across the mm-hmm. board. But most importantly, they held on to Malik Washington, mm-hmm. who I think – it's very rare nowadays where you have a Elite 11 finalist that goes as a true freshman to a place where he's from, like he's from the DMV area,
right,
and then balls out immediately and doesn't get pillaged. I feel this way about CJ Bailey as well at NC State. It's like, really? So places like Miami were willing to give $6.5 million to Darian Mensah and pay God knows what in terms of legal fees. People were willing to give the Sorsby kid $6.5 million, and Sam Levitt got God knows what. Like, I feel like Malik Washington and C.J. Bailey had some of the better tape. And guess what? They're young.
Yeah.
Like Malik Washington has so much years left on his, you know, playing career in college. I think he's one of the names people need to pay attention to. Hell, he's not even the most Googleable Malik Washington right now, I found out today. Some guy that played in the league several years ago is. So I think more and more people are going to find out about Malik Washington out there at Maryland this year. I think Nebraska is a football team that ranks third on this list with 69% of its production returning.
Yes.
Falling asleep at the wheel over there, boys.
I was double-checking to make sure.
But I think they're one of these teams that poke a hole in this entire metric.
Of course.
Where it's like, dude, yeah, you returned 70% of your roster, but you were a bad football team last year. I mean, you're not good enough.
The same can be said
for
South Carolina. They ranked second in offensive returning production.
Same note.
And the offense was so bad last year. Right. It was the crux of that football team.
Four of the top five teams are not going to be, I can tell you right now, are not going to be competing for the playoff. Maryland will not be. Now, Maryland is not a program that typically would. Nebraska might fire their coach this year. Virginia Tech you have to assume that's going to be a better season with James Franklin, but that's not based on returning production. That's based on a new head coach. And then obviously South Carolina, like Shane Beamer will be on the hot seat for the majority of this year as well. So like the returning production metric, I don't think as much holds as much weight. Now, obviously there are some teams that you look at and you're like, all right, that could be a good sign for them. Georgia's in the top 10 here. Florida's surprisingly in the top 10, even though they fired their coach. Notre Dame being number one, that has to make you feel good about it. So I think it's one of these things where it can just supplement the argument as to why you think a national title team will compete, but I don't look at this and go, oh, keep an eye out on Nebraska this year. They return a lot.
Yeah. I think it would be important to carry metrics like this and combine them with things like blue chip ratios,
mm-hmm.
right? Like how purely talented is your roster and how experienced is your roster? Because one without the other doesn't really matter,
right?
You know, nowadays, now, like that Indiana team, yes, they were really, really experienced, but they were a really talented bunch too. So I think that's the thing we got to pay more attention to nowadays.
I would say that this is more so used now for like a confirmation tool, like what Kirby's talking about.
Yeah,
where like Vanderbilt depleted the roster, absolutely depleted. Ooh. That confirms my thoughts heading into this next season for Vanderbilt, where I think, hey, not going to be nearly as good as they were this past season or the past 2 years. That confirms that. Alabama offensively returns hardly anything. Now, defensively, they're good, which we knew they were going to be good on that. But the questions offensively, that makes sense.
See, but like they're returning, according to Connolly's equation, their returning production on offense is going to take a massive hit because they took five of their seven transfers on the offensive line haven't played big-time college football. They're just really talented high school recruits.
Right. And you factor
right?
in
– so, like, that doesn't they're just null and void.
Well, and you factor in the fact that you lose Jeremy Bernard, you lose Isaiah Horton, you lose Jam Miller, you lose Ty Simpson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's got to be like 50% or 60% of your offensive production from last year and those guys alone. So that's going to be a huge factor.
Now, one team that's in that top 10 that I look at and was like, damn, I loved your football team last year. I thought you were really, really scrappy. Every time I looked up, I'm like, that team's in it. Houston. Houston returns a lot of production. Big Willie Fritz guy around here. We think he runs his program the right way. Always has. I mean, hell, he won it basically every stop he's been at. They've won football games at a high rate.
Yeah. They're ranked 17 with 65% total.
Is Weigman coming back there?
I think it's someone else.
I know Keyshawn Henderson is there, the true freshman.
Right.
But I don't expect him to play early on in the year. But they return a lot.
It is Connor Weigman.
Okay. I mean, that. I thought he played really well in spurts last year.
Yeah.
I think people – never mind. I'm going to save that take for next year. Connor Weigman plays much better football and is just as physically talented as Drew Aller. They look the same.
I'm not going to push back.
I draft him about the same.
Bro, I would right now. I would right now. But wait until Connor Weigman puts another year together. I'm telling you, he played much better football at Houston than he did at A&M. Just cleaner. The operation was better. He played better quarterback in his first year down there at Houston. Excited to see what he does in year two. I think that kind of transitioned. Do y'all have any more takes on returning production?
No, I mean, obviously the biggest thing there for I think a lot of people is the fact that Notre Dame came into the offseason as viewed upon as a team that people could foresee winning a national title, and then you see them rank at the top of returning production. Again, a confirmation tool of Notre Dame probably going to be as good as we think they are, especially with the schedule.
I about fell for some of that spring propaganda. I saw one clip of the Mylon Graham kid.
Oh, did you?
Holy hell. That kid scoots, man.
I mean,
glides out there.
The only other takeaway I have from this is that the G5 just gets clapped every year. Like, you go to the bottom, like, 15 teams, and there is basically not one.
Buddy, my ECU Pirates had seven Division I football players taken up off of their roster by Power 4.
Yeah, I believe
it. Seven. My ECU Pirates, swing your sword, baby. If that's not their slogan, it needs to be.
I don't know what the slogan is, but that's in the running.
People, I know some people. I might get something going on.
All right.
I would imagine Mr. Beast gets to say the end-all, be-all up there
that's
nowadays.
Right. That's
I feel like Mike Leach kind of patented the swing your sword thing.
Is that his? Is that his thing?
That's kind of like what
is it a pirate? It's a pirate's thing, no?
Yeah, but like it's like the Mike Leach thing. Like
okay.
Like not to say like it's not a good slogan. That's just like
good to know.
It'd be unoriginal.
Good to know. Boys, I looked at some win totals today, And before we get into value here, I have one question before we get into who you should go run to FanDuel or wherever you can get a ticket in and start getting some early value right now on some of these win totals. Before we get into that, have y'all seen what's going on in the Big 12? Y'all seen what Vegas thinks of what's going on in the Big 12?
Yeah, Vegas is not very high on the Big 12 as a conference.
Vegas thinks Texas Tech is going to like just roll the ball out and beat the shit out of everybody.
Yeah,
but that's – I mean, to be fair, that is how we have viewed the Big 12 for the last 3 years. Now, our preconceived
going into last year and this year, Texas Tech.
I would disagree with that because I would say prior to Arizona State going to the college football playoff, we said it's Utah. We were like,
correct.
Utah's going to go in there and just run house.
But that's different than Texas Tech being an 11.5 win total team and the next highest being 8.5 wins out there, BYU and Utah.
But I feel like that's how I viewed that conference.
I did not. I viewed the Big 12 as an anybody's conference 2 years ago.
Yeah, I would agree with him.
The year Texas Tech went 7-5 with Baron Morton closing out the end of the year. I think they won three of their last four games or something. They ended the season strong and then got all the money from Cody Campbell and then bought a $7 million defensive line and then bam, now they're a playoff team. These last 2 years are totally different. The Big 12 wasn't any man's conference for the longest time. And now – we have an 11.5 win total team and 8.5 down to 7.5 at Houston.
Right, but
there's such a wage gap here.
For me, at least, I've always felt like there's been a team that feels like the front runner and it's just everybody else. Because, like, Arizona State went to college football playoff. They come back the next year and it's, well, they still have Levitt and they have Jordan Tyson. Those are two of the best players in that conference.
Who'd you pick last year to win the Big 12?
Probably Arizona State, if I remember correctly.
Who'd you pick last year to win the Big 12?
I think I picked Texas Tech.
I picked TCU. So on this desk alone, there were three different conference championship predictions just 12 months ago in this conference. So it was an any man's conference for our show standard, Jonathan. This was not the ACC.
Right,
you know what I mean?
I think really what I'm getting at is I think that majority of us would agree that, like, no matter who we predict to win this conference, we would agree that it's going to be one team that's good enough to be in a college football playoff, and the rest of it's probably going to be some mediocre football.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. The takeaway I had from it, which, you know, either way, I hear with both what you're saying, but the takeaway I had from it was undefeated's like the floor for Texas Tech this year. Like,
yeah.
The basically, the expectation
you have to bet on a loss.
Yeah, like that's kind of crazy.
Go look at the schedule. You can't hardly find one, basically.
Yeah, that's what made it so crazy to me. It's not necessarily like how, you know, the Big 12 as a whole isn't a great conference. No one's ever looked at like that. Like, it just so happens one team has been able to spend more money. The fact that team is now predicted to go undefeated.
Drastic amounts of more money.
Yeah.
I'm going to take Houston to be a team that goes over win totals. I think it's set at 7.5. Guys, if I said Houston's going to spend $18 million on this roster this year, would you say over or under?
Under.
Probably under.
I would say under. Texas Tech's going to spend 42.
Mm-hmm.
I think Houston's going to finish second or third in this conference.
Wouldn't surprise me.
There is no gap like that in other conferences.
No, there's not.
I mean, there just isn't. So from a wage standpoint, like how much we're paying athletes. So it's just different. I think we got to either get a rein on them or maybe move them. I don't know. It's so different than other conferences. Mm-hmm. Guys, even Vandy spends probably like 18 to 20 on football, or at least last year they did. And the top of the conference spends maybe 40. That's 2x. We're talking the rest of the conference being able to spend half to a third of what a Texas Tech can. That's not fair.
I mean, yeah.
Not
I mean,
that this is about fairness, but it is. It's a conference.
I mean, let's if Texas Tech wins the Big 12 3 years in a row, then we can probably have a discussion about it. But
okay.
The reality is, like,
I mean, they clean sweep. I mean, the Arizona State loss was a little finicky and head scratching last year.
Right.
But apart from that, they rolled the thing. So we'll see if they do it again this year. Lord knows, I think they took an upgrade at the quarterback position. Let's talk about win totals. Okay. We went over to FanDuel. They're the only ones that really got them out right now. So if you want to get some early action, head over there with our friends over at FanDuel. Let's go find it some value.
Can we stick in the Big 12?
I want to go first.
Okay.
You can stick in the Big 12, though. Transition. Like this.
I want to stay in the Big 12 because I think BYU at 8.5.
Pretty salty.
Insane value right there. I think Kalani Sitake can win 9 games. I view him as a 9-win coach every single year, and they return quite a bit of their production this year. They return their quarterback at Bachemeyer. I just think they're, again, going to be one of these solid teams in this conference where it's hard to find a lot of solid teams. I think they win 9 games.
Watching a lot of BYU lately because I got to watch a lot of Texas Tech guys because they're up for the draft, especially on the defensive side of the football.
Mm-hmm.
Bachmeyer makes like 3 or 4 throws a game where you're like, whoa, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited year two there.
And that was a guy that didn't know he was going to have the starting job until halfway through the offseason.
And did it as a true freshman.
And so I know that there's quite a bit of separation between them and Texas Tech. But again, like, I view them as like that tier two level of the Big 12. I think they win 9 games.
I think there's a major difference between BYU and the Kansas State, UCF's, the rest of the Big 12.
Mm-hmm.
Not named. I think Houston's really good. Everybody else in the Big 12, I'm like, I don't know what you got going on going into 2026. 6.5 for Vandy? You're telling me I got to find 6 losses with a schedule that has Georgia, Ole Miss, Bama at Florida and Tennessee on it?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go ahead and chalk 5 of those up right there. Boom, there's 5. And then all I got to do is cross my fingers and hope they lose one of the following. NC State at Auburn, Arkansas at Kentucky, Mississippi State.
Yeah.
I mean, they're liable to drop 2 of those, and I'll give them Tennessee. Don't listen to me, Vols fans. You're going to beat them. What did they play in Nashville last year? Tennessee?
No, they were in Knoxville. Vandy? They were in Knoxville.
Why are they playing in Knoxville 2 years in a row?
They do. That happens every now and then with the schedule.
Because of the schedule, randomizing?
Readjusts, yeah.
But anyways, you tell me, all I got to do is find 6 losses on a Vandy schedule next year? Cake money. I'm riding it.
Yeah.
Take the under.
I don't hate it. I mean, I don't have any unders on here, but that's a pretty good under if I had to pick one. Vandy is one of these teams. I think they do take a big step back. I just think there's too many moving parts going into this next year and too many places where there's going to be some growing pains.
Hot take. Jared Curtis, far better prospect, needs more help.
Yeah.
Needs more help than a Diego Pavia does.
Yeah.
Can't just option his way to 3rd and 2. Like, we actually have to play football.
And
we have to play offense.
And the rebuttal to that is going to be, did you watch what he did in high school? But
okay.
We all watched the high school tape and we're like, okay, what he is doing to elevate this football team are not things that you could just walk into the SEC and do.
I mean, I think he's the next coming of Matthew Stafford, like everybody else.
Oh,
Matthew Stafford at AJ Green has still went 7-5.
Sure,
gonna let y'all know that.
Oh,
okay,
he had, I think it's 7-5. That's a little bit of dramatic.
7-6.
9-3.
9-3.
Come on.
Wasn't there a we lost the UCF game in there?
That's 2010 in the bowl game.
Okay.
Aaron Murray was the quarterback at that
point. Oh, damn. My bad, Murray.
First year Murray.
That's on me, Murray. All right. You know, this isn't a – I'm not taking the line here. I just thought it was very interesting and a talking point worth pointing out. LSU being set at 8.5.
Scares me a little.
Buddy, a 9-3 season for LSU in year one of Lane Kiffin. This is going to sound crazy. That's a disappointment.
Yeah,
they did not bring this guy in to go 9-3.
So
that's like, not what they brought him in to do.
I know this is a cop out answer to that argument of it would depend on who and how you lose.
Correct.
Correct.
Who do you lose to, and how do you lose those games?
So let me make you real, real queasy. If you know Lane Kiffin's history, and if you know if you're an LSU fan, not really the best finisher of seasons normally.
Yes.
We literally kind of tapped out on one last year, and then the year we had playoff expectations going into the year at Ole Miss, we kind of pooped the bed down the stretch in that one as well. Have you seen the close to LSU schedule?
Yes, I have.
In 2026?
Not very easy.
How about no bye week in the month of November, and here's what you got. Bama, Texas, at Tennessee, close at Arkansas. I don't know how I feel.
There's your bye week.
About
he got a bye week. Come on,
damn,
man.
Dog.
Hey, come on, man.
Damn, dog.
We're talking end of season. Arkansas.
Disrespectful to the Hogs,
that's,
brother.
That's
honestly,
you know,
honestly, in my notes it says, "How about that 3 week stretch in late November?"
Yeah, I mean, that's 3-8 Arkansas. That God knows what they're going to look like.
You know what? God forbid, guys. We had an Arkansas fan listening tonight. I just didn't want to isolate him.
Hey, no shade to the Arkansas Razorback fans. I'm sure you're happy that it's baseball season, but let's just be real, man.
I'm staying away from the line. It's just a 9-3 result would cash as the over in Vegas, and I think 52% of the LSU fan base would be like, wait a minute. We gave him how much money and did what for him to go 9-3?
Yeah, but again, like Brian Kelly was 9-3 in his first season. That was viewed as like, what Brian Kelly has arrived.
And that right there will be the most liked post on the message boards. Brian Kelly was 9-3, guys.
But Brian Kelly was also following up Ed Orgeron. 9-3 was a breath of fresh air. That was, oh my gosh, yeah. Look, we were so close.
Yeah. I mean, Lane Kiffin will be following up the tail end of the Brian Kelly era, so there's that. Like,
so that's one I'm staying away from. You want to know one I'm absolutely hammering? Like, I legitimately might create a FanDuel account and run and do this. I might drive across state lines just to get money on this.
Which one?
Ole Miss 7.5.
Yeah, I'm with you on this one.
Keewon Lacy and Trinidad Chambliss are 8 wins good.
I'm with you on
by that. By themselves. I think they're 8 wins good by themselves.
That's a crazy take.
You think so?
You just made a reference of Matthew Stafford and A.J. Green going 7-5. And now you're like, hey, the running back and the quarterback's good enough to get you 8 wins. Like, Ole Miss should win more than 8 games this year. I agree with you. But saying it's just because those two guys, I don't know if all of that. Like,
I got to find 5 losses on that schedule, though. That's the hard part.
I mean, yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's fair. Like I said, like the over is a –
that's the way I look at these lines, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, it's not find too brutal of losses. A schedule, to be honest, in my opinion. Like, it's Louisville, Charlotte, LSU, at Florida, at Vandy, Missouri, at Texas, Auburn at home, Georgia at home, at Oklahoma, Wofford, and Mississippi State.
Yeah.
So, I could say they're going to lose to Oklahoma, Georgia, Texas, and LSU, and I still got – a little leeway with Louisville.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel good about 8-4 there.
Yeah, baseline. No, I think that's fine. I think another staying in the SEC, this isn't one that I think is a value pick, but just something to take note of. Josh Heupel might be in trouble.
What was it, 6.5?
6.5. Yeah. And look, I understand that they're introducing a first-year quarterback and they're coming off of the Nico thing, but going 7-5 or – God forbid 6-6 this year would not be great for Josh Heupel.
If he goes 6-6 and both quarterbacks look like poop,
we got a big problem.
We got big problems.
He might be gone.
I'm not gonna say gone.
Might, right.
But it's not just him. It's the whole evaluation process has to get called into question.
Mm-hmm.
If both of those kids are bad, which yeah. I don't think is possible. I there's no way in my mind both of them aren't good. One of them has to be halfway decent.
Well, again, like the way I've always looked at it, and I know we're getting a little bit off topic, is like the valuation that where Tennessee football was in 2022 and, you know, heading into 2023 is so far removed from what we see now. It's not just the quarterback thing. I know everyone references Nico, but the defense was not where it needed to be. And all
chat saying Vegas is not high on the SEC this season. I would argue Vegas is high on the median of the SEC.
Yeah.
They're not high on the top end. Because how can you be right now? It's too many questions.
I mean, the highest win totals in the SEC last year were 9.5.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it makes sense.
It's not like this in the Big Ten.
No.
In the Big Ten, there's 3 teams at the top. There's 2 teams in the middle, and there's a bunch of 7 win teams projected.
Yeah, the fact that Ohio State and Penn State have the same win totals mm-hmm. is crazy too. It's obvious because the schedules could not be more different.
And that's been my whole point about that conference. And every Big Ten fan comes back and says rings, and I get it. The top is the top. The top is really, really good right now. My questions about the Big Ten have always been consistently, what does 6-18 look like in your conference? Because when 6-18 aren't very good on a year-to-year basis, we get schedules like what Penn State has,
mm-hmm.
where Penn State is essentially Iowa State on roster playing in a Big Ten school,
yep.
and Vegas thinks they're going to win 9.5 games. And you'll look at that and you'll say, huh? Penn State, 9.5 wins this year. That would be incredible. And then you look at the schedule and you realize they don't play Oregon, they don't play Indiana, and they don't play Ohio State. How is that possible? They drew Michigan, Washington, and USC. Those are the 3 best teams out of the conference that they drew. This is what happens when we have inflated conferences that really aren't all that deep at the bottom end. They're great at the top. They really are. But we got to find some depth and consistency in the bottom ends of these conferences. Like, for example, Illinois has been heralded and exalted as this great, like, hey, that was a quality win the last 2 years. Brett Bielema turned it into a really good football program. Brett Bielema's got Illinois what Michigan State used to be in this conference. They're a 7.5 win projected football team this year.
I think it's value.
You think it's value?
I think Illinois at 7.5.
You Caden Howser guy, huh?
I mean, yeah. I think that, like, Illinois has always, like, under Brett Bielema, they have always been this. They've always been 8-4. They've always been 8-4 good in the Big Ten, at least the past few years. I think it's I think they'd be 8-4 again this year. That's okay. How I would view them. They're okay. Always defensive laden. They're always like a defensive sound team. You can always bank on that for them. Against the top, like I would almost view Illinois as I do BYU in the Big 12. I don't think that they're going to be on the level of the Ohio States or the Oregons or the Indianas right now, just like I don't think BYU is going to be on the level of Texas Tech. But against everybody else, I'll take Illinois majority of the time.
Okay. Any other? I got several more that I like.
I have Ohio State 9.5 just because I can't conceive.
Can't find them. Two losses?
Yeah. Well, I can't find three. I'm banking on them winning 10. Three.
That's right.
I can't foresee Ryan Day losing three games in the regular season. It's hard for me to believe that. Mm-hmm. Like, I know the schedule's tough. It's brutal. And that's the reason why it's at 9.5. But envisioning the Buckeyes missing the playoffs and not being in that situation, I just can't believe it.
Yeah, I mean, for that, like programs like Ohio State, like Georgia, where it's basically like disaster scenario with 9-3. Kirby Smart has basically guaranteed you two losses in the regular season since 2017. It's almost a decade now. Like, just keep hammering that over until they have a tragedy or something just goes terribly wrong in that season, because it's a safe bet. So there's the value for me.
I like Maryland at 4.5.
I didn't really look at those.
If y'all don't like that one, how about Michigan State at 3.5?
Maybe.
Jeez.
Michigan State has – their non-con's tough. They took Notre Dame non-con. And then they got 9 other Power Four games.
Here's one.
It's not great, but like 3.5, dude.
See if you
can. Pat Fitzgerald gonna drag somebody into deep water.
Here's one that's interesting, in my opinion. Florida State at 6.5.
That's interesting to you,
buddy? Couldn't pay me to watch a Seminole game this year.
Would you? And you're out here saying Michigan State got value? Come on.
Hey, 3.5 for a football team. It's like,
not bad.
That's what I'm saying, though.
They play two tomato cans. We're halfway there.
Yeah.
Does anyone look
at Ball State a dub right quick?
Does anyone look at Florida State and say, I could see 7 wins this year out of that team?
Oh, you're talking about the under.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. Oh. I thought you were talking about value. No. Hey, 7-5.
I don't think 7.
I have zero projection into Florida State football because I've given it zero mental thought process.
I understand that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, looking at that and being 7 wins from that team. Like, I know they went 5-7 last year and they supposedly had a lot of good pieces, but.
Huh?
Yeah.
Really?
They went 5-7 last
year. No, I'm talking about the good pieces part. I was hung.
Or like you they supposedly look, added good pieces. People think they got an upgrade at quarterback.
This is how irrelevant Florida State is the fact that Deuce Robinson went for over 1,000 yards last season, mm-hmm. and nobody talked about it.
Yeah.
He's on the roster still. Nothing. There's nothing about Deuce Robinson and him coming back for another
season. That year 3 bag for Ousmane Cramagh going to be thick.
Yeah.
That thing going to be thick.
Mm-hmm.
He probably signed a 2-year deal down there.
If I'm Ousmane Cramagh, I'm out of high school. I'm it. This is me. This is the me show.
I don't know. I might be tapping helmet Jeremiah Love style midway through the third quarter.
Get your 15 totes.
Yeah, get up. Hey, put that flash tape on.
Hey, freshman.
Go ahead. Tap that helmet. Get to that sideline. Hey, stay healthy.
Freshman, this is what we paid you for. Go on.
Who's playing QB? That would be Ashton Daniels.
Yep.
Yes.
So, again, like not a horrible quarterback.
I like him.
I like that addition way more.
I like
more.
Him better than Thomas.
That's what I was about to say. I like that addition way more than I like Thomas Castellanos, but it's not enough for me to – I'm with you. The under, I'll happily take that one.
Yeah, so it's like 7 wins for that team. I don't see that happening. Another one, this isn't me projecting or finding value here, but this has got to be Deion's last year, right? The line's at 4.5. Like that – program has lost all of its steam.
I don't know if there is a last year for him. I don't know. I have
well,
no
like
idea.
Like the reason why Deion Sanders was, hey, the record doesn't even matter, was because there's excitement around that program. They're trendy. I feel like that kind of wavered off. Even
yeah, what
last
if we're just
year.
Not very good? You know.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. And it's also like
I think this year will be the like we're this is year 3.
This is year 4.
It's year 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we should have it turned around by now.
Exactly.
I'm with you on that.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm kind of like, hey, I think we might need to like have a real conversation, a serious actual conversation about like it might be time to move on from Deion Sanders because the clout isn't there. The controversy, the taking up headlines, like First Take's not talking about Deion in Colorado. He's not taking any headlines.
How much money do you think Deion makes a year? Not I'm not talking about outside of his salary.
Oh, you mean just in total?
I mean, dude, he's got his own bass fishing line. He's got his own sunglass line. He's got a deal with Nike. He's got all kinds of stuff. How much money do you think he makes? I don't mean to pocket watch the guy.
Probably
but here's what I'm saying.
15 mil.
Here's what I'm trying to get at. If it gets bad enough, and it's bad enough on the roster side of things, what stops him next year from saying, I'm committing $15 million myself? There are no rules against it, right? Because, I mean, Summerall gave $300,000 to Tulane. I mean, Eli Drinkwitz is giving money to Missouri. What stopped Biff Poggi from doing this at Charlotte apart from return on investment? He's too smart with his money.
My whole thing, though.
I think that's what's going to stop
me. My whole thing, though, with that argument is I think we saw Colorado at its peak. I think we've already seen it. Like, I think that what you had with Shadur and Travis.
Man, I'd feel real, real bad for Josh Niblett if that were the case. She's kind of canned a really, really good high school football career to be out spending 18 months on a dying roster.
He can always go back to that.
Yeah, at Tuscaloosa Academy.
Well, he'll get a job.
I know he will. But we waited all those years, turned out. I mean, the amount of jobs that guy turned and said no to go jump on that wagon.
Yeah, right. And like,
it's so weird.
Again, like, that's his decision.
I know.
Like, I you
the
can't
Lord's show, decision, according to him. Well, you and can't. We have to stand by that.
You can't show sympathy for people who make their decisions and do things like that. It's not like this was a, hey, Colorado's really going to be great this year, and you're joining something special. Like, we knew what Colorado was going to be.
Yeah.
So
I did have one more team that I wanted to mention in this. Shocked you didn't throw this one up there. Alabama 8.5.
Yeah, I got asked about this on an Alabama radio show. I think that's cashing over.
Yeah, I think the defense is good enough.
Bro, the schedule's really manageable.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not a bad schedule.
For an SEC 9-game slate, not bad.
I think Alabama, and I think like Kalen DeBoer has won everywhere he's been. I know, like, whatever you want to say about Kalen DeBoer,
and
say it. But
if you listen to Bama fans, they didn't even want Ty Simpson back. He wasn't even going to start this year. You know what I mean? Guy was buns.
This is spring at its peak.
Guy wasn't even going to play. Look at these two quarterbacks. That guy wasn't even going to play. He didn't want him back.
Yeah.
Y'all ain't seen this narrative?
No, I have, but it's just like, I don't even feel it.
Are we even sure Ty Simpson was welcomed back? Yes. Yes, we were. Yes. At least I was. Speaking of which, I have my final grades on these two football players. Do you want them?
Absolutely.
It's a big talking point as of late. Really not much. It's not that much of a talking point because it appears that Dan Orlovsky is just getting flamed to the visceral end of the earth for this.
Yeah,
he did a horrible job.
What was so bad about this, by the way? I didn't watch it. He went on McAfee today and got grilled.
They get caught up in this conversation about big games that Fernando Mendoza's played in, and Dan Orlovsky proceeded to say, "What big games?"
Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah. So, like, very clearly he was not prepared.
Well, also, like, he started referencing the score of the Big Ten Championship and was just, like, flat out wrong. Yeah. It's like he did his argument no favors today.
I also, the brief clip I watched, I kind of turned off because I felt like every time Dan tried to talk, they were stepping on him pretty hard. And I get it. I know what McAfee's doing there. He's probably standing up for the Indiana guy.
Sure.
And he likes Mendoza. Mendoza's been on the show. Mendoza doesn't go on very many shows. So there's that. I've done the final eval, so let's just do this. I've spent the last two days, breaking these guys down. The Mendoza tape was released today. Seems to be a dud, but it is what it is. We're going to work anyways. Tomorrow, the Ty Simpson recording will be published. We got done doing that today. We talked about the pros and cons of both players last night, right?
Yes.
And it's really, in my opinion, about which negatives do you want to live with in both of these football players and live with for a long time? Because we're talking about potentially first-round draft picks, right? For Fernando, we're talking about the 1-1. We're talking about the number one overall draft pick. If I take you at a quarterback position, number one overall, I expect you to be my guy for 10 to 15 years. Like, it should be solved. That is what I'm drafting you to do. So if we're talking about that, we can talk about lifelong, I'm okay living with this negative. All right, so with Mendoza, he's 6'5", he's 236 pounds. We don't know what he runs in a 40 based off film, and I think I'm pretty good at this. I'd say about a 4.72 athlete. Mm-hmm. Good enough. Very, very serviceable as an athlete and a competitive, tough runner when he pulls the ball down. We're all good there. I think he is deadly accurate. Okay. In our film study, I compared him to Kyle Korver from a standpoint of when his feet are set, when there is a predetermined read, when he is a catch and shoot player, it is 100% dead balls accurate. Like, he does not miss, all right, at all. Love him moving to in and out of the pocket as well, running to his right, running to his left, always keeping his eyes downfield. I think he's tremendously accurate on the run, which is something we're going to talk about in the negative facet over there with Ty Simpson. Great thrower on the move. However, there's little that is translatable about the offense that he worked in at Indiana. People got mad at me today on social media because I said his tape is not translatable. It is not. It is not from a standpoint of this is what he is doing on Saturday. This is what we ask people to do on Sundays. On Sundays, we ask people to play under center. On Sundays, we ask people to take five-step drops. On Sundays, we ask people to read half-field concepts over here, work to the backside of the progression. On Sundays, we ask people to handle pre-snap reads. Can we actually run two plays at the line of scrimmage? Can we handle the operation? Those are all things that we did not see on Indiana's offensive tape. It is nowhere to be had, okay? In fact, when we charted it through three games, we told you last night, there were five opportunities in which the coach asked him to go through a full, pure progression. Not a, we're reading leverage. If it's there, we take it and we throw the ball. It's a two totally different ways of playing the quarterback position. And the yes, no, reading leverage type of quarterback play does not translate to college or pro football. It doesn't mean he can't do it. It means that we haven't asked him to do it, and we haven't seen him do it at a really, really high rate as opposed to the other guy that we're talking about. And I think that's what Dan's getting caught up in. And I could imagine, because I've done it over the last week. If you watch these guys back-to-back, one guy, you're sitting there going, man, like, I wish I could see him do some big boy stuff. I wish I could see him do something other than throw a back shoulder fade or throw the high corner really, really well, throw the post really, really well when it's the first reading the progression. I'd love to watch him actually work and actually play the position, and then you turn Ty Simpson's tape on and it ain't nothing but that. It is nothing but full operational NFL Sunday concepts. So I can see what he's getting caught up in. There's no doubt about it. It's right there on the tape. And that's when we can talk about Ty. In my opinion, there's zero doubt about whether or not Ty can play NFL football, right? Like, he is going to be a success story. It's about the length of how long we're going to be successful, in my opinion. And we saw this year. Okay, we saw this year. When we play 14 games in a real big-time pro-style offense where things aren't really working well around us. By the way, that's going to happen to us on Sunday at some point in our career. We take a big hit. We can't quite protect ourselves. Our body starts to deteriorate midway through the season. But there are NFL throws all over the tape. And I do think, while I was writing these notes today, that Garrett Nussmeier, for some reason, kept coming up into my head. Because, good Lord, there's all kinds of NFL tape, NFL throws on the 2024 tape for Garrett Nussmeier. And then what happens in 2025? He sustains an injury, right? And he doesn't look anything like himself, so much so that he's about to be a third-round draft pick. Well, guess who is also isn't 6'5", 236 pounds? Garrett Nussmeier. Garrett Nussmeier is 6'2". He's 210-ish, right? Like, he's a little bit bigger and thicker than Ty. But the point still is applied to players like Ty. There's only been one real successful 15-year career. I'm 6'1", 200 pounds, and I'm never going to be the biggest, strongest, fastest. And it's Drew Brees. And that, to me, would be like the real scary projection. With one guy, I have to project whether or not he can run a pro-style system, and that's Fernando. With the other guy, I have to project whether or not he can survive for 17 games. And that, to me, year over year, would be something that would scare me away. So here's what I've got, okay? I graded both of these football players in a multitude of categories. Let me give you the categories. One second. Let me find my notes. They're all jumbled today. The categories, all right? Athleticism, frame, accuracy, pocket presence, arm strength, and arm talent. You guys know the difference between arm strength and arm talent here on this show. If you don't, arm strength, all right, is how far I can throw it. What is our velo? Am I 105 off the bump or am I 92 off the bump, right? Arm talent is, hey, how many different ways can I find the juice? If I get put into a bad spot, can I still find the angle, find a good spin, and get the ball out? Arm talent. All right, that is the difference. For Fernando Mendoza, I have an overall score of 4.63. I gave his frame a 4.98. Could be a little bit more muscular. We could be 6'6", 250 mm-hmm. instead of 6'5", 236. You know what I mean? Right. Athleticism, I gave him a 4.75. Accuracy, I think he's dead balls accurate, 5.0. Pocket presence, I gave him a 3.25. His lowest score by far on anything we got. Arm strength, I gave him a 4.85. Hey, we underthrew like three posts in the seven games I watched, all right? So it's not the biggest arm in the world. Arm Talent, I gave him a 4.95 for a total score of 4.63. As for Ty Simpson, I gave his frame a 4.0. I gave his athleticism a 4.0. I gave his accuracy a 4.75. I gave him a ding for throws on the run. I didn't notice this during the season. It popped up like crazy on the tape. Mm-hmm. When we're rolling to our right, when we're rolling to our left, we're not as accurate as I ultimately thought we were going back and rewatching it today. Hell, most of our interceptions come from doing things we shouldn't be doing to our right. Threw two picks against Vandy like that. Probably shouldn't be making those mistakes. So there is that. Pocket presence, I gave him a 4.95. This guy's dialed inside the pocket. Arm strength, 4.5. Arm talent, 4.5. I think we're good enough. I don't think we're special in any type of way for an overall score of 4.45.
So what was Fernando's again?
4.63.
Okay.
So it sounds like Fernando's the winner.
Slightly better.
Fernando is QB1. Now, I've got how many grades over there?
Eight.
All right, let's go to the board and talk about some of these. Okay. Now, I do these for high school classes every year, and I break them down into a variety of categories. Feel like I'm a show your work kind of guy, so I'm gonna show the work. All right, here's what we got going on. Quarterbacks, I don't know if we want to go by each one of these, but I just discussed this, right? Frame, athleticism, accuracy, pocket presence, or your general processor, right? Those are the same for me. Arm strength and arm talent. All right, couple of things I added here. These are new to this board and new to my evaluation period. Defense, you see what's one consistent metric on all these defenses, right? Motor. You either have it or you don't. Right here it says motor, all or nothing. You're either 5.0 or it is non-applicable, okay? Non-applicable. Same thing over here for offensive line. You're finished. You either get a 5.0, your fight to finish is a 5.0 or it is non-applicable. Let's roll this thing over and start talking about some grades. I got a D&D on the board. Jonathan, you know what D&D stands for?
Do not draft.
I'm locked in D&D. Do not disturb. No, I'm kidding. It's do not draft. I got a do not draft first of the year. Spencer Fano, my boy from Utah. You know why?
Why?
Zero strain. Zero strain. Zero fight to finish. Just out there getting it done. I ain't about out there getting it done. I'm out there about balls to the wall. I want to see some fight. I want to see some effort. I want to see some strain. I saw none of it on Spencer Fano. Right now, my highest rated player in the class, Francis Mawanoa. Mm-hmm. All right. I think Francis is elite. Absolutely. I think he's not far and away. I think he's clear cut. Offensive line, offensive tackle one, closely followed by Monroe Freeland. We're going to talk about him in the local hour. I've got his full player evaluation to talk about tonight. Watched Jacob Rodriguez today. Very disappointed. Not a lot of twitch in this athlete, mm-hmm. but a very smooth athlete. And my God, the amount of times he punches the ball. I'm worried about him breaking his fist. I mean, so many times, every time we're near the ball, we're taking shots at it. The offensive guard, I'm not even going to try on the name here from Penn State. Just a good football player. Mm. Now, I've been trying to watch all three games. You see right here, it says don't watch their best. Watch them versus the best and give me three games. I had to shut Penn State tape off because I was vomiting off this offense.
Not very good.
Bro, it was so bad. It was watching Penn State football players get offensive play calls like they were Kansas football players.
Oh.
Yeah, so that was not fun.
Don't disrespect the Jayhawks, man. Come on.
I was a little disappointed in the Arvell Reese tape, not going to lie. Should I give that take I gave you today, or should I save that?
Maybe save that one for a different day.
Yeah, maybe on draft day ruin those.
Perhaps.
It's just weird to me, man.
I also don't want you to feel like you're pushed up on time to not deliver the full take, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's very weird to me that we're just – that guy's worthy of a top five pick, but every off-ball linebacker isn't. And I think he's an off-ball linebacker. I do not think he is an NFL edge rusher. So why is he valuable enough to take inside the top three, but a player like Sonny Styles is not? When majority of their play is going to be done off-ball in the box.
And see, this is where we get into this conversation that we had after we went to the NFL Combine, where – we were told that NFL teams don't really value the combine all that much.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have cases like Arvell Reese. Now, don't get me wrong. Arvell Reese has good college tape, put up numbers.
Great college tape.
Production is there. Checks all the boxes there. But obviously, too, was a freak show at the NFL Combine. And I think that's kind of the tipping point where now it's like a top five draft pick.
And I get it because, like, he's not just a linebacker. He's got rushable traits. Like, we think he can get after – and he can get after the quarterback. But this isn't like Micah Parsons. Like, people are going to do that. I think you're going to hear that label. I felt like I could watch Micah Parsons tape in college and know that he could be a 10-sack guy if I just did that. If we just let you play a wide nine – every single down, you can hold up and run support, and you can be a 10-sack plus guy. Hell, you might be the best pass rusher in pro football at some point. I'm not saying that ever about watching Arvell Reese tape. I think he's a great pursuit rusher. Mm-hmm. I think he's a great sim pressure rusher, right? A lot of coffee house stunts that they run where they pretend to drop him and he's quick enough to get home still. All that great stuff. But I told you today, you ain't going to find some ghost move on this kid's tape. You're not going to find a long arm stick that gets home. You're not going to find hand work. You're not going to find that stuff. You're going to find high effort, twitchy rushing that's overwhelming in college football. I don't know how that applies to third down rushing in pro football. Mm-hmm. So he's still going to be, he's going to be a top five pick. There's mm-hmm. no doubt about it. It's weird to me that I think he's a better off ball linebacker than he is a wide nine. So there's that for me. What else we got here? Oh, these coaches' stories. Dabo Swinney probably feels like he touched the forbidden fruit, huh?
Oh, man. It's ironic that it is him that's going through all these troubles right now because he was so against the portal, and finally when it does, you know, all right, fine, I'll take portal players, it goes this bad.
That's what's most ironic about it. It's not that it's happening to Dabo. It's that it's happening to Dabo the year he finally bends the knee. He's finally like, all right, we're going to be terrible. I'm losing all my good defensive players to the NFL draft. I'll take 11 transfers. 10 of the 11 will be on the defensive side of the football. And then the Lord's like, Luke Farrelly, Ole Miss. That defensive tackle you randomly took out of West Georgia, blow his knee out. This is unfortunate for Clemson.
Yeah. Do we classify it as bending the knee to it, though? Like,
hey, Jonathan, how else would you describe going 5 years of being like, hey, we ain't doing it. That's not what we're doing. And then, bam, we'll take 11. We'll try to take 11 of them.
Maybe he bent a toe. I don't know if he bent the knee to it. It wasn't like he was like, all right, let's build a transfer portal roster. Yeah. Let's just open it up. But he was like, fine, you know, we'll get a couple of these guys. Now, no disrespect to my man that came from West Georgia, but he came from West Georgia, and that was supposed to be a starter for the Clemson Tigers this year. Just saying. Now, it changes if Luke Farrelly ends up staying at Clemson and he's going to be one of the starting linebackers for them and he doesn't ultimately transfer out after transferring in. But, I mean, it is unfortunate that even to the degree that Dabo was willing to do this, he's just getting burnt.
Sammy Brown going to be the Will Smith meme from Always Fresh or Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, where he's walking in the living room, he's all by himself.
Oh, he's the Lambo next to the trailer.
Yeah, that's going to be Sammy Brown.
That is Sammy Brown.
Sammy Brown
going to
be looking around like, where's everybody at?
Sammy Brown might have 200 tackles this year.
Shit, he damn near had it last year.
Yeah.
That tongue going to be dragging come fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah. Lord.
Poor guy.
Yeah.
Tough. Couldn't happen to a better guy. I'm just kidding. I don't have any harbored feelings towards Dabo. I think Dabo's a good dude. I think I at least appreciate that he will take a stand. I don't appreciate coaches that are constantly moving.
I mean, I think that it certainly comes out of fault because we've seen what it's kind of done to his program, but he has stuck to his guns for the better
part of a decade.
Is there
a way to take a stand without being holier than thou, though?
No.
That would be there's not?
Well, yes.
Is there a way to?
There is.
Because I think he does it from – I think the reason he is unlikable is because of how holier than thou his stance feels.
Oh, for sure.
You know?
For
like,
sure.
If Dabo just took the stance of like, hey, coach, notice that you're not as active in the transfer portal as these other teams. If he just simply was like, that's just not what we believe in. We believe in the guys that we recruit, and those are the guys that we want to go out there and execute with. Nobody would say anything about it. Now, people would still give the take of the times are passing him. He's not built for the new era of college football. But it wouldn't be this whole thing of, I'm so glad Dabo Swinney's getting smacked around every Saturday now.
Yeah, I mean, he did not do himself favors in the likability category.
You ever seen Arrested Development?
I've watched a few episodes, couldn't get into it.
Yeah, it's a tough one. You got to watch it. There's a lot of subliminal laughter there.
Yes.
Like a lot of the things that are happening on screen are funnier than the actual dialogue. And no laugh track, so that doesn't help at all either. Mm-hmm. You don't know when something funny happened. But anyways, there's a character in that show. His name is Tobias, and he is what they call a never nude. He never gets naked. He, even when he goes swimming, he like swims in like cut off blue jeans. You know what I mean? He's a never nude.
Okay.
Alex Golish strikes me as a never happy. Alex Golish strikes me as someone who never in their life ever allows themselves to be happy.
It's like a Cignetti type figure.
Well, but you guys weren't there at the national title.
Well, he won the national title.
I know, but we at least saw it. Like Nick Saban strikes me as a never happy. In post national titles, he was never happy.
That's not true.
You know what I mean?
He was happy after titles.
In front of a microphone, in front of a camera, never saw a smile from Nick Saban that he didn't want you to see.
So I think there's different levels to these never happy people, because like I would, for the most part, describe Kirby Smart as a never happy guy.
Correct.
Like when he's in front of a microphone and he's talking about his football team, he is never happy generally with the product that has been displayed so far. But then you also have never happy like Dan Hurley, the UConn head coach.
Yeah.
Well, that dude just wants to mother F everybody, and he's never happy.
I feel like Alex Golish is a little bit of the Dan Hurley.
Okay.
But Dan Hurley, to me, when he's in interviews, is a little bit likable. He's like, I watch him. He's an entertainer to me. I don't think Alex Golish is. I think Alex Golish is always pissed off, always a robot. Always. And we found this out today. Now, he was doing the coach thing post-practice. Was like, that's the worst we have looked since I've been here. That was terrible. And I even told guys, I pulled them together before team. I said, this is awful. And then he let the media know it was awful.
Honestly, should you be hitting the panic button if your coach doesn't say that in the first week of spring practice? Like at the beginning of spring, if they're
honestly,
coming
to we're 16-0. I think we're perfect.
This is the most ahead of schedule one of my teams has ever been before in my entire career.
I was going to say, with all the smoke they've tried to pump up Auburn fans' asses the last three regimes, I think that's been welcome.
That's true.
Oh, our coach is unhappy with the way things are going right now?
Yeah.
I'm open to that. That's fine with me. We just got told for 2.5 years how close we were.
So dang close. Why I golf on Sundays?
Man.
Love that guy.
I wouldn't say
that. Hey, hit a hole-in-one this week. Did y'all see that?
No,
I didn't
see that. Hugh Freeze hit a hole-in-one.
Hugh Freeze hitting hole-in-ones. Brian Kelly's on his 12th bowl of queso. I mean, it's just the two differences.
The real question is, do you think Brian Kelly is a side jalapenos guy or jalapenos in the cheese dip or a no jalapenos guy?
It got to be jalapenos in.
Jalapenos on the side guy because I respect the people at the table. I want the jalapeno, I'll put it on top of the cheese.
If you just don't want the jalapenos, I'm like, whatever. I'm not even going to eat the jalapenos at this point. I'll just bend the knee and eat some bland queso.
Mm. I just don't like the taste of jalapenos.
Yeah, I think the move for the table, just general generosity, is jalapenos on the side.
See, I've never even thought of that.
Yeah,
because you don't think of others. It's okay.
No, I do. That's why I'm just like, all right, you don't like jalapenos, we'll just get the plain queso. I do it every time I go to Mexican food with my wife.
You're all or nothing guy.
Yeah. It's okay. Just, hey, if that's how it's going to be, let's do it.
Good to know.
I won't pass on the queso because I like queso, but boy, it'd be way better if I had some jalapenos in here.
We love backtracking around here, don't we?
In what context?
I don't know. I'd say if we love it, but, you know.
We love John Summer all around here, right?
You love John Summer.
You certainly do.
We are skeptical.
I'm cool with John Summer. John Summer, I don't know if I love him.
You cool with him?
He's cool. Yeah. I mean,
he's all right.
We'll see. I think he could. He
did a little backtracking today.
He did some major backtracking.
So,
unprompted backtracking.
Yeah. Let's tell the audience what actually happened before we actually ask what you think happened here. So Summerall got quoted and went viral before spring break because him and his wife has a birthday and an anniversary, I think timed up at the same time period, and they were going to go to Italy. And Summerall apparently told his wife, we ain't got time for that. I got too much shit. And that was verbatim. I got too much shit to do.
Mm-hmm.
He made it a point in his opening comments today that is not how it went down. Just want to make it clear. Want to make everybody known. My wife was the one who told us, you ain't got time for Italy. We don't need to be going. And then he doubled down and let everybody know that his wife is a better coach's wife than he is a head coach.
How
do you think this? You're a married man. How do you think this came out?
And I don't want to say this in distaste of like saying that John Summerall's wife is this type of person or that he is that. But this is how I feel like this conversation went down. All right, we got the Italy trip planned. Mm-hmm. We are not at Florida at this point in time. Mm-hmm. We got it booked. Going to be a great time. Looking forward to it. Oh, the Florida job's here. Taking that job. John Summerall comes home one day. He's like, "Hey, honey, I got this new job. We're at the Florida Gator. We can't go to Italy. Sorry, just don't have time for it. We got to make this happen." She's like, "No, we paid. We booked it. We're going. We planned this. We're going." So there's a little back and forth for about a couple weeks to where the point she's like, "You know what? No, we're not going. We're not going on this trip because it means so much to you that you're at Florida for this time."
Oh, the passive aggressive. You can win. This is a staple in the wifehood.
Yeah, you get this victory. We're not going. And he's like, "No, we'll go. I know. No, we're not going anymore because you don't want to go."
Passively aggressively folding up her outfits that she was going to wear in Italy.
And so now he gets in front of the microphone. He's like, no. She told me we're not going. We're not allowed to go to Italy because this job means that much.
So that's how you think this went down. Here's how I think this went down. I think it actually went down like he said it went down the first time. And then he got home and his wife was like, "You said what about me?" You said
no,
what?
No.
That is not how this is going to go down.
I'm not going to be known as that wife in Gainesville, Florida.
Or third option. He saw all the people talking about him as this like demonstrative husband and was like, "We can't be having people talking about me like that."
The correct theory, I think it is, and based on what we've seen from Coach Summerall on social media recently, is he does this like, "Oh, look at me. I'm the hardest worker in the room."
Two jobs.
And then gets clowned for it. Like, how many graphics has he posted about how hard he's been working since that first one? About, "Yo, why would you post this?" Same thing where we're not going to Italy. And then all of a sudden he gets clowned on social media. Now he comes out and it's, "Hey, that's not how I went down, actually." I think John Summerall is I'm going to say things because it's going to seem like, "Oh, he's the hardest worker in the room." And then he gets clowned on social media and then he backtracks it. That's my theory.
I'm honestly shocked he didn't just straight out say, "Was Urban Meyer taking trips to Italy?"
Yeah, like... we've completely forgot about that. Where it's like, I was talking to
John
myself.
Summerall is the Jason Tatum of Kobe fandom, but it's with Urban Meyer. That is the equivalent of this.
John Summerall is constantly trying to say things that are going to be like, "Oh my God, he's him." And he has no touch with that. That's resonated to someone.
I can't. I thought I was getting 0-3'd when he told me he said on a show, "I looked at Urban Meyer in the face. And I couldn't hear anything he was saying because all I could think was, I'm looking at myself.
This is me.
This is me.
I'm talking to myself."
Damnedest thing I've ever heard.
That's a lot. Oh, man. That's a lot. Speaking of a lot, we have a whole other hour coming up right after the break. See you on the other side.